can help support the channel by heading to our merchandise store and picking up some of our great aircraft designs created by our graphic designer. We have everything from fighters to transport aircraft, which you can choose to have printed on t-shirts, mugs, stickers, and much, much more. Head to the description below and click the links and pick up your design today. Thank you and enjoy.
So, what shows were you looking forward to in the 95 season? Mm-hmm. And did you put a bit more effort into certain ones? Because you're like, I really want to be here.
I don't think we ever put more effort. Always wanted everyone to be professional. And you look at the list, and it was a bit like, I think, a big rock star concert tour. It's like, wow. I definitely had favourites. I loved Duxford. How can you not love Duxford? You're on this amazingly historic airfield with everything still there. The atmosphere of Duxford is superb. You've got this iconic lineup of warbirds, of Hurricanes, Spitfires, Mustangs, Thunderbolts. It's a short runway, but we were allowed to land there, and we were allowed to be part of that lineup, which was quite good. Now, normal runway length for an F3 is 6,000 feet. We could operate down to 4,500 feet with 11 group permission. Duxford was 4,500 feet, so we could operate from Duxford, and that was. That was absolutely terrific. It had challenges. No instrument approach aids. We landed once and the weather was horrible, but got in. And takeoff had its moments. So short runway, you've got some critical speeds. You've got a speed. If you lose an engine, you are going too fast to stop, but you haven't got enough speed to get airborne. And that gap we call the graveyard gap. And Duxford had a graveyard gap of a few seconds where we're like in no man's land.
Oh, yeah.
And we might have to eject. So to kind of mitigate that risk, we'd sit at the end of the runway for a little while, just prove the engine, soak the engines, full power, brakes release, go. So at least then we've got a fighting chance. If the engine was going to blow out, it would have done it because we're not changing the power setting. Once at Duxford, what we didn't really know is that at the end of Duxford's runway, you've got the M11 with a big embankment. It's all got this matting stuff on the top or whatever. Mm. The efflux from the afterburners was lifting the matting, and all these stones and everything's being blown into the M11. So we were talking about cars earlier. Yeah. Well, the Jag display guy who was there, his jet was actually at Stansted because, you know, it was just too far away. He's waving a big red card at us as we taxi by and going, what have we done? So we haven't broken any gates, speeds were fine. So we go and see the display director, and a load of cars had been damaged by all these stones.
Really?
He just needed the phone number of MOD helpline. And, you know, we never heard about it again.
That.
Yeah. So I loved Duxford. And socially, it was great. Always a nice hog roast and like an enclosure at the end. And it wasn't known then, but I kind of felt a little bit of imposter's sort of syndrome. Because you've got some of the globe's greatest display pilots at Duxford, and we're in the same space. It's almost like we're not worthy.
Yeah,
you know, a little bit of that. And the other thing, you are, because of where you're parked, you're with the public. And that was great. And it was great for our ground crew, probably more of later. Mm-hmm. The other ones I really enjoyed, and I don't know if you ever went to Sunderland.
Oh, yes.
Right. The free air shows.
Brilliant.
Something like Fairford, it's a long way for a lot of people. It's an awful lot of money for people to go. It's amazing for the enthusiasts, but for families and stuff like that, can often be out of reach. I thought the free air shows were amazing. Sunderland, I think, had like 100,000 people.
It was a big air show.
It was big. It was huge, wasn't it? And the other one that was like similar was Folkestone, Shepway.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, both free. And that would attract an awful lot of people who might not go to an air show. And that was great because with our ground crew, we spent a lot of time, if we weren't at Newcastle with a jet, at sort of like our pitch, our stand, whatever you want to call it, meeting members of the public. And that was so important to do. And doing Sunderland, staying with Folkestone was a really good opportunity. Both great venues as well, relatively easy venues. You know, the display line was, you know, some boys in the water and everything else. But yeah, wonderful places to display. So I'd say that they were probably my standout favourites. I had lots of favourites. I wouldn't say we ever tried to put more effort into one or the other. We just wanted everyone to be good.
Yeah. Before we get into the public and social side, if you were landing at an air show like say Riyadh, would you ever do like a nice entrance there before you landed, wings back, you know, for before you came into land?
We were always authorized for 600 knots, 100 feet running and brake.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was all part of our kind of like PDA. Takeoffs, when we left, our takeoffs were the most SOP, standard operating procedure. We did our takeoffs by the book. Because again, at Fairford, you see lots of mates, lots of statics going, oh, I can show these display guys how to do a takeoff. And you go, so our takeoffs were always incredibly standard.
Fair yeah. enough. So can you talk us through about dealing with the public? Did you enjoy it, interacting, you know, with the fans and enthusiasts?
Very much, and it was actually a big part of the role. You know, you're ambassadors for the Air Force, you're very much on public display. Same with the ground crew. We had three teams of ground crew, six in each team. And again, they're on display as well. And they were all, you know, they had proper display suits, engineering suits that were blue as opposed to coveralls that were about five sizes too big, covered in oil or grease. So as a team, and it was a team, we would be there very much in front and working and talking to the public. And it was always interesting because there would be people there, the super enthusiasts who knew more about this jet's history than I would. And then there'd be families, and you see these families with their shy children. I'm going, go and ask them.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
What's it made of, or some question like that. But if at the end of the day, if you'd inspired somebody to maybe want to join the Air Force, you were doing a good job. And not everybody wanted to join to be an air crew. You know, a lot of people wanted to join to be engineers or whatever. And to see our ground crew working, you know, especially somewhere like Duxford, they wouldn't do like the Thunderbirds or the Blue Angels choreography, but they looked good. Mm-hmm. You know, they did an amazing job. And that could, again, could inspire people to go and become, you know, engineers on the aircraft. Mm-hmm. So it was a really important thing to do. And there's quite a lot of media and press stuff involved. And
did you have to get trained up for that, going in front of the cameras, for instance?
I had media training, yeah.
Right.
I had it on a separate course. So that was quite useful, you know, to go and do that. And yeah.
So who did you enjoy interacting with the most? I mean, was it little kids, like just obviously wide-eyed thinking, wow, this is amazing? Or who did you enjoy?
I actually think the families who are having a nice day out, who might not go to an air show.
Yeah.
And you're hoping they had enough sunblock and they were lugging around big hampers of food and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think for those families, you know, just to realise that we're all real people and this is how the taxpayers' money is going and everything else, and we enjoy our job. And as I say, if you could hopefully inspire them, you know, somebody to go and join the Air Force. And yeah, that was good. That was good.
Yeah, because it kind of provokes memory for me, like when my dad used to take me to air shows when I was little, and there'd be like, you know, two guys standing in front of the tornado. I can't go and talk.
I was the same.
Yeah, because you thought they were like celebrities, like they don't want to talk to me. But, you know, it was so nerve-wracking. But once you start talking, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was the same. I went to Valley air shows when I was like 10 or something like that. Absolutely relate to that 100%.
So let's talk about the social side of air shows. Was there a lot of hangar parties, and what was it like mixing with other crews from other nations?
It was great, but we had to be good. Obviously, some weekends we're flying four or five displays, everything else. So every day we'd have to go and do more work. So whereas the statics would really go for it generally at the parties, we'd go have a beer or whatever. One of us would be driving back to where we're staying. So if Matt had done the hard work flying, I'd volunteer to drive back, and then we sort of go and do more socialising, probably at the hotels at the end of the day, to be quite honest. Yeah, because we were working hard, pretty tiring, and we needed our sleep. And I've done the statics where it's like you can sleep when you're dead. Yeah. Displaying is very, very different.
Yeah.
Some of the social occasions were really good. Sunderland, again, there was always something lined up for, you know, the display community, a nice meal, bit of reception.
Where would that be at? Because I'm from up here.
Was it the hotel on the Lees?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Right. Yeah, got you.
Just north of Display Datum?
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much at Display Datum?
Yeah.
And other things, I'm going to pick up a book now. Here we go. This book, to me, was one of the highlights of my whole social. Geoffrey Page, Wing Commander. So we're at a dinner, which has been organised by Jan Fraser at Shepway. And it's a Battle of Britain display pilots dinner on the Saturday night. And myself and Matt are on the same table as Wing Commander Geoffrey Page, retired, very old man now, and his wife Pauline. Now, Geoffrey Page, he was a very young man, 18, 19, Battle of Britain flying Hurricanes on 56. And of course, we were 56 Squadron. And in August 1940, he was shot down, very badly burnt. The Hurricane had a real, I think, fire was a bit of an issue. Horrendously burned. He was one of Archie MacIndoe's guinea pigs. And he's kind of telling the story, but he's not. You know, he's very humble, he's very modest. And Pauline, his wife, they were going out at the time. I think they called it courting or something. So at the end of a hard day of ops, they'd all jump in a car, go to London. She was a dancer in the West End. 5 a.m, they'd be back with their Hurricanes, and one day he was shot down. But Pauline was immensely proud and said, "Geoffrey, but you haven't told them about this. Geoffrey, you haven't told them about these two Messerschmitts you shot down." And myself and Matt are just lapping up this history. This is real history. But all Geoffrey wants to talk about is 56 now, what the squadron's like. Have we still got this bit of World War I memorabilia in the crew room? And what's the tornado like? So that's an evening that's really firmly locked into the memory, very much.
And did you ever keep in contact with any other display crews that you got on really well with?
Yeah, we do. It's a very, very, very small world out there. So, for example, Disco, who flew the Tucano at the time, again, flew a great display. He ended up as the boss of the Battle of Britain Memorial flight, and I was working out at Coningsby a few years ago, so it's catch up with the coffee and all sorts of stuff. And with social media now, it's so much easier to see. So, yeah, very much so.
And do you have reunions as like on the display circuit, or is anything like that? I know you get like squadron reunions or type reunions, but do you ever get like airshow reunions?
No, not that I know of, unless I'm sort of like persona non grata. Yeah, and also on the social side, of course, I met my wife on the circuit. So we're looking forward to celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary later this year. So that was another bonus of getting the F3 display, I suppose.
Absolutely. Brilliant stuff. How many air shows did you fly in the 95 season?
All together in 95, I think we did about 44 displays.
Wow.
Now that includes a few sort of like closed displays. So if we needed to do a practice, and it could be aligned, like at Coningsby, we did one for the chief of the air staff of the Korean Air Force, we could tick that off as like a display. So some of the practices that we did like a closed door one in a way at Linton for a family's day. And that was as a thank you, because it was a great idea from the boss before Mildenhall to go and do a practice at somewhere else. So our first display in front of the public was not in front of 100,000 people. It was, but not at Coningsby, it was somewhere else. So he phoned up his mate at Linton and said, "You happy to have 10 minutes of noise?" "Yeah, students will love it." So we did a practice at Linton, and as a thank you, we went back and did a family's day. But I think it was 44 altogether.
Wow.
I look back at those years now, and you look at the airshow calendar now, and I think, you know, they were just amazing days, because you had such a huge menu of RAF aircraft doing displays, and there were so many displays in the country, you know. And I look at the diary now, and there's so few.
Yeah.
Really, it's they were good days.
Absolutely, yeah. So did you choose the 1996 nav, or was that up to somebody else?
So 96 was going to be me, myself and Matt again. It would have been Matt's second season, my third. But then at the time, there was a real problem with the F3 force, with the engines. We were having a lot of high pressure turbine failures in the engines. They were effectively thrashing themselves to bit, uncontained engine failures, rear fuselage fires, and we're losing jets. So there's a big modification program coming in, and quite rightly, I think the authorities sort of had to prioritize operations, because the jet was flying over Bosnia at the time.
Yeah.
So the 96 display season didn't happen. Sadly for Matt, very much so. 97, it went back to 25 to Pete Hackett, Willie, and Al Taylor. Spotty. I've got to get in the fact that on one side of the jet, they could put Spotty Willie on their aeroplane. But when they were selected, myself and Matt went up there for a couple of days with our big book of knowledge, everything we had. So Matt flew with Willie on a few trips and kind of, again, just brain dumped all the lessons that had been learned over the years. And I sat down with Willie as the nav, and I went through the nav's job, all the venues, all the admin, because we didn't have a manager. It was just me and Matt. So all of the work that we did was just us two and our engineers as well. We were very small and self-contained.
And it was on top of your role as an instructor. Wasn't your full-time role as a display nav?
It was on top, absolutely. Right, so right. If we look at the working week and start Monday, we'd come back from wherever the venue was. We'd do the quick signals back to group saying, "We're back, still alive." Brightling Sea, we did a rolling. Coldrose, we did a flat. Halton, we did a full, whatever. And any comments or observations. By Monday lunchtime, we was kind of like done. And our executive officer was really keen. He'd been, again, group experience, I think, with the accident, that we would then have a bit of a break. So we'd have Monday afternoon off and Tuesday. So I come back to my home in North Yorkshire. Wednesday, back on the OCU. And now they kind of own us pretty much for Wednesday. So we'd be back instructing. invariably I'd find myself not flying, but either being the authorizer on the desk or running the ground training sessions because the amount of flying I was getting anyway. Thursday, it was like hybrid. We were owned a bit by the OCU, but also we could prioritize all the display admin that we had to do, which we were doing the other days anyway. And then Friday, 100% concentrating on the display stuff to make sure that ourselves, the spare, the engineers were, you know, fully prepared, good to go to wherever the weekend's venue would
be.
It was a lot of work.
But worth it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think we really did crew duty in those days either as well.
Right. And I think you have with you your actually display flying suit. Were they always black?
No.
I thought it was quite a modern thing.
British Aerospace helped with these. We had black. Previous ones had been grey, but like Air Defence grey, but it was black. For the 94 display season. They're all tailored by a company that made motor racing driver suits down by Peterborough. So I went down and got that one fitted, tailored. And they were quite smart because they fitted. Our ground crew, they had blue ones as well, you know, with red t-shirts, and that was like sort of like the dress code. And then some bright spark senior officer somewhere in headquarters thought these were elitist and said, we can't wear display flying suits unless you're in the Red Arrows or the Battle of Britain Memorial flight.
Oh.
And RAF flying suits in those days used to come in like three sizes, extra large, average and tiny, with various bits stitched on. You know, they didn't really look that great. And you are still being ambassadors, really,
of
for
course.
The Air Force.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
We kind of got together with a few of the other display people. Again, remember speaking to Andy Offer, you know, with the Harry, and said, how can we get around this? Do you think we'll notice if we have them tailored, but done in green? So unless you're like as close as we are now, if that senior officer's going around an air show, he probably wouldn't notice that we're actually back in, you know, smart flight suits. So that's what we did. So 95, right, believe it or not, this is green. So that's what we did for the 95 season.
Wow.
Now, 95, I don't know if you remember it, it was super hot and sunny. Like, we'd be at Fairford for like 10 hours under this, you know, with loads of sunblock. So, such was the effect, these went brown.
Wow.
Yeah, the sun just bleached the green. So, parts under there are still green, others are brown. But there we go. So, that was the 95 season.
Brilliant stuff.
And we all basically went round with these, elitist or not.
I don't think so at all.
I don't think so either.
But can you remember how many hours you just got from displaying the jet?
No, I can't. We never really looked at hours.
Did you know,
it wouldn't be very many. A lot of the trips would be just 10 minutes. I've got a lot of 10-minute trips in my logbooks, so they didn't really add up. The transits would really be more of the hours, I think, rather than those. So I just looked at the number of displays. So I did, I think, 19... in 94, and they said over 40 in 95. It's quite a good number, though.
Absolutely. And from all your display flying, did you ever have a mishap with the jet? Did anything go wrong while flying?
Never. We were so lucky. The jet, we had a Hyde leak in St. Athan, and we had to run for the spare, but that was just to reposition back to Woodford. And once airborne, again, I'd be first looking at the captions. We're just coming off the top of a vertical maneuver, and we just had a caption like, whoop, whoop, heads in. And it was SPILS, which is the Spin Prevention Incidents Limiting System. It's all to do effectively with a fly-by-wire. And there's a couple of probes either side of the nose, covered up with a red panel. And we figured that was just probably just a difference of airflow onto the probe. That was sensed, and that would trigger the caption. And the immediate action there was basically just stop your maneuvering, 12 seconds, reset, press the button, goes away, and then we just carried on with the display. So I think we kind of flew out of a maneuver and then recovered the display. We were very boring. We didn't have any nasties.
That's impressive. That's
the
really
jet
impressive.
The jet was incredible, but that again is tribute to our ground crew. Our ground crew were incredible. So we had three teams of six. We had a chief tech in charge, you know, no officers, which was good in a way. Very experienced, and in each team of six, you'd have the trade cover to basically cover engines, airframes, hides, avionics, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We'd have a mini bus full of a bit of a toss of a coin, spare parts and toolkits in there. And then the sixth would be just a line technician, a good guy who'd done really well, but wasn't a trade qualified, but to give somebody a bit of a nice deal. So those ground crew, They were absolutely superb, professionally and socially. And I remember Wittering, we did have an issue with the jet. I can't remember if it was a gearbox or if it was the APU, but I do remember Sergeant A.D. Bell, myself and Matt, about 11:30, taking him a coffee because he was there through the night working this snag.
Wow.
Next morning, jet's good to go.
Brilliant.
Yeah. They were absolutely brilliant. I can't speak highly enough, you know, about our ground crew.
Absolutely.
And I'm still in touch with, you know, quite a few of those guys. Yeah.
It's great to hear.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you had a great time on the display circuit.
It's a team. It's a team effort. It's a team with me, Matt, Goat. I don't think I've flown with anybody more than I've flown with Matt. You know, and you have to get on with who you're flying with, you know, in this kind of stuff. It's a team effort with the ground crew. In particular, and say they were just terrific. And we'd have ground crew positioned around the country. We might have a team at Southport supporting the Woodvale display, another team down at Manston, because now we've got to beat feet and do Shepway. So we'd have teams around the country. And it was a team effort from Coningsby, actually. The station were hugely supportive from, you know, the station commander and his support, the paint job we had on the jet, opening hours that we needed to do bits and pieces. You know, that was really good as well. And it was just a wonderful community to be part of. You know, I was hugely privileged to do it. Very, very lucky.
I'm not jealous at all. John, do you have any hobbies?
Actually, in a way, I suppose the work's a bit of a hobby. That sounds a bit sad, I suppose, but flying fast jets has always been entertaining, and you could say it's a hobby. And I still fly now. I left the Air Force 10 years ago, and I fly with a company, and we're still very involved with the Air Force. So that's quite nice, where your work actually has a hobby sort of side to it. So yeah, I'd definitely say that.
It's a win-win.
Yeah, it is a win-win.
Favourite aircraft you've flown?
Flown? Tomcat.
You've flown the Tomcat?
Tomcat.
No, you haven't. Have you really?
Yeah.
Oh, you have to tell us that story, John.
So, 95-ish, the VF-101, the RAG, came over to Coningsby, you know, great place, yeah, to have a look around. And basically, it was just a sort of development, fact-finding, a little bit of a trip. And we flew them in the F3, played in the sim, went down to London for a few days. And then the year later, we reciprocated. So a bunch of us went to the States, went to DC. Then we went down to Oceania, went to the Fighter Fling, which is a big party they have every year with all the Tomcat squadrons. And then we basically gave a presentation. Then we all had a Tomcat trip, or most of us did, because then what happened is we then joined them down to Key West. And those that didn't fly the Tomcat in Oceania, they flew the Tomcat down in Key West. I don't think we get away with that in these days.
Wow, what did you think of it compared to the Tornado?
Now, this is going to sound really strange, because I flew in the A model, the old model. Yeah. We had an exchange guy who flew in the B, but we couldn't go to the B for security reasons. We weren't cleared at that time. It was archaic. Back of an A model Tomcat, it was archaic. And actually, it wasn't as powerful as I thought it was going to be. It did, you know, the engines, it didn't have the big donks that the D version had. So you still feel super impressive, though, walking out and strapping into a Tomcat. There's something about that aircraft. It looks right, you know. It just is a beautiful, beautiful aeroplane. It's got so much presence.
Did you ever fly against an F-14, actually?
I never flew against an F-14.
Right. Do you think you could have had it, though, being, obviously, with your backseat tripping an F-14? Do you think you'd be okay?
Well, there we go. Now, if we talk about a Tornado early days, no. But when I finished flying the F-3, which was 2008, when every jet had data link, the full-up radar, very different radar. We're flying with 4 AMRAAM and 4 ASRAAM. Yeah, doing our tactics.
I like it. When you would like to fly, either past or present?
I think now, if I look at this from a navigator's perspective, Mosquito.
Okay.
I think the Mosquito is just a beautiful aeroplane. And if you were in that position in those years, it would have been as a navigator. Please post me Mosquitoes. Not just the operational capability, but you had a pretty good chance of coming home every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think it's a wonderful, wonderful aeroplane.
Nice. Which did you prefer, operational or display flying?
That's a really good question. I've actually thought about that. Can't separate them. I think display flying was amazing and a real privilege to do. But I did a lot of time over southern Iraq as well. I with 25 and looked after quite a lot of that detachment side as well. And Flying and Ops brings together all of your professional training. It brings together the entire team on the squadron to make it happen. You know, the air crew, the engineers, the logisticians, the adminer, everything like that. You see the very, very best of people. And there's something about Flying on Ops that really just brings everything together. So I really can't put a preference. I think I was just very lucky to be able to do both.
Mm. And I got one from one of our patrons here. Which did you prefer flying, the Phantom or Tornado?
Again, really hard.
If there was two on the runway, ready to go, which one would you have a backseat trip in again?
Can I take the Tomcat?
I'll give you that then. Fair enough. And can we find you online anywhere?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, so I'm there.
Well, John, thanks very much for sharing a bit of your story.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.